So spatial anchoring is easily understood like this. A person, when they're talking about the positive and negative aspects
of themselves,
their body will be in a certain position. It'll be a certain way. Not just body position, but their facial expressions. The blood might flush out of their face, or they get real white, or it might rush to their face. You might notice their neck pulsates a little bit more. They might breathe from their chest instead of their stomach, or they might breathe from their shoulders. Like the breathing will shift. Yeah. All these little subtleties say something. Uh-huh. You know.
Yeah.
Their tone might change. And you can, once you know what to look for, you notice it all the time. Some people will say certain things in a negative state, and you can pick up on what their negative state is. Right? And then they'll say things in a positive state, and you can pick up what that is. So what some people will do in therapies where they're walking around and maybe you meet at a restaurant or something, is the therapist is trying to get you to talk about certain things in your positive position without telling you. So they might have you do a certain exercise or sit a certain way or say, hey, let me do this for me real quick. And, you know, and you're helping them with a favor, just doing whatever. They ask you a question when you're unconsciously in your a better body position, you're like, and you have an epiphany. You know, you have this thought, and that's just one thing, and that's using just spatial anchoring as a tool for therapy. Okay, mm-hmm. In what we're going through here, he's setting it up for later because he's going to collapse the negative anchor and replace it with the good one. So he's building them both up right now, mm-hmm. And he's established that one side, the left side, is the bad path, and anytime he mentions anything negative or anything they're trying to get rid of, he gestures almost like a sweeping motion on the left side.
Okay.
Or he'll actually gesture like he's putting that thought, that thing, that concept that they're building. He'll take it from in front of them and put it on his left side, mm-hmm. or on the client's left side.
Mm-hmm. Right? And he's choosing the left side because he's already taken information from them and he knows
Okay. Here he's building, because of the way it's set up, he's building the anchor for them.
He's not taking advantage
of theirs. He's saying this is what it is. And the mind just subconsciously kind of picks up on it and accepts like, this is what's happening.
I thought he was using a little bit of their essence already in what he's doing, mm-hmm. so that they continue to get that yes
because in the context of this work, the client doesn't think the work has started until they get to the exercise, the mm-hmm. process at the end.
Uh-huh,
so a lot of this is happening.
Yeah, I believe that. You know? This is just in the beginning when they're building rapport, yeah, talking.
So he's doing all that, and then the right side has all the good stuff, all the positive stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he gestures in that one, and that one is more of an accepting gesture, like you're bringing it in for a hug, mm-hmm. you know, and this is a subconscious symbol, you know, this is what we want, this is what we're working for.
Exactly. You know? And it's like your body is like telling a story.
And you almost want to change your tone to be a little more upbeat and lighthearted, and you take your positive stance as a practitioner and bring that positive energy to this right here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like being a good practitioner is the same as being a good actor.
Yeah.
You know, you got to draw on those emotions, that energy. People feel that. So you've got those anchors going, right? And throughout the session, he's just weighing pros and cons, and eventually those gestures, he changes them to where you're really just sweeping it out and you got the right one right in front of you, and it's the only path you want to take because nothing else matters. You know, and all of a sudden, his theatrics make sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Understandable. Yeah. It's like they understand the story that their body has been speaking. It's just registering as this like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. That's the ticket.
Yeah, and these are the little subtleties that allow you, anybody, to pull so much out of a simple little exercise, a simple little thought experiment. You know, like this experiment of, you know, believing your thoughts and creating the emotions you feel inside of you. There's an experiment, cutting into a lemon, going into the kitchen and cutting a lemon and really feeling your mouth salivate, that and the other thing.
I wrote that in my book to give people the idea of mm-hmm. just seeing something on a television screen, mm-hmm. or you conjuring it up in your mind, it can, you know, conjure up the sensations in the body that would actually be doing it if itself was doing that thing, mm-hmm. that you're watching or thinking of,
yeah.
like a lemon. It's perfect.
Yeah. It's so... I do something similar It's a little bit more dramatic than a lemon. But the power isn't in the exercise. The whole time leading up to the exercise, I'm doing this gestural stuff, but I'm also telling a story that will end up being the context that the mind grabs for when they get tipped to the trance of Vinayapalabhati, to that where they have their epiphany. Where they have their epiphany at the end of the exercise, right? All this information I gave them will be what reinforces their epiphany.
100%.
And that's where the power comes from. It's not the exercise. Mm-mm. It's what the exercise brings in.
Right. It's what it allows for. Exactly. To come forth in words and visuals and body and just the whole thing. It's like a true experiential thing.
So as a practitioner, I want to make sure that I do everything I know how to do to insert little nuances that are going to enforce their epiphany, enforce their change, enforce what they're looking for. And as a magician, that means a lot. Which is great.
It's like the knowing and the self-confidence and the know-how to keep that feeling and continue to move forward in that space from within is super powerful. Especially when you go out in life and that thing that you're wanting to heal or overcome presents itself and you make different choices. And that's when you know the shift is real. You make a choice that honors your integrity, honors the thing that's going to make you feel good. And you're like, whoa, this feels nice. And then you become addicted to that feeling.
Exactly.
Instead of pain and pleasure, you become addicted to peace. Yes. I mean, pain and suffering, you become addicted to peace and pleasure, joy. Mm-hmm. Freedom.
And then you only have issues if your definition of nice is pain and suffering.
Because
you don't know any better.
Well, that's where most people are at, but that's okay because we all kind of like succumb to that bamboozlement to some degree, some more than others.
We all make it out though.
But we all make it out alive. But we get the free will to decide how soon we come alive while we're still in a body. How alive are you really? Depends on how real you're being to your highest self, for your highest self. Don't you agree?
Yes.
Like using our free will to make wise, loving choices and then having compassion for ourselves when we choose the opposite and then course correct and get back on track on the soul train. Dun, 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 soul train.